timber, turn them off now. Turn them off, turn them off, turn them off now. Let's keep bright, turn them off now. Turn them off, turn them off, turn them off now.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roundtable. My name is Gideon.
My name is Jules, and we are here with Jimmy and Ben from the Ascot Royals. How are you doing today, guys? Yeah,
good day.
A little hazy.
Yeah, I think we all had a bit of a wild night last night.
Yes, and forgot to mention that this is our first Out of Toronto podcast ever. We are currently in Paris, Ontario.
Glamorous Paris.
It's still pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we're here with the Ascot Royals. We're chilling. You guys have some new stuff in the works, but let's take it right back first and talk a little bit about the origin of the band. How did you guys come together?
Yeah, well, it was a while back, probably about 7 years now. It was different members, but with this lineup, it sort of came about 2.5-3 years ago now.
Yeah, Jim met our drummer and our guitarist at Metalworks.
Nice.
When they were at school there, and we met our bass player through one of our great friends who's also a great photographer and we've done work with in the past, and yeah, it's great. Just all fell together.
Organic.
Most excellent.
Yes. And I'm asking this as a joke question, but just for those who don't know, how did you guys meet?
Well, about 25 years ago.
We shared a very small apartment.
So, have you guys always been comfortable playing music together? Have you guys always got along?
Oh, yeah.
it's been good. We haven't got that bad ever.
I think if people never argue,
yeah,
so they don't care enough. No, honestly, when you're so passionate about something, it's, you know, Everyone has their moments.
Yeah. Have you been making music together all your lives, or did it start with the Ascot Royals?
We had some basement bands before that.
Yeah.
Fun. Nothing serious, but it's kind of how you learn, right?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you've lived out of the city for a while, too, so I imagine that the band scene is, like, a little harder to pull together a group of musicians, probably.
Actually, you'd be surprised. I think it might be easier because, I don't know how to put it, but there's actually a lot of musicians in this area.
Yeah.
And I feel like the smaller the town, the more interested in music people are, because
there's always much less to do as well, too.
Yeah, you've got
more time on your hands, you're just sitting in your room playing guitar or whatever you do.
Yeah, it's hustling bass guitar thing, it's just laid back and no choice but to pick up the guitar and stuff and stuff jamming.
Yeah, sure, and I mean, there's such a such a less concentration, a less concentration, God. Such a smaller concentration of bands as well, so there's kind of less to choose from, and people say, well, that's the band I'm going to go in then.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Do you find with that small town scene that there's more crossover between bands, like somebody playing in several simultaneously?
There's a fair bit, yeah. We try to keep steady with like just our crew, because that's the thing, we want to just come up with the best sort of ideas for each other type thing. But there's always like sort of that we pick up different jam bands and stuff, like playing covers and just having a good time, and like with tons of different mates, like a few different projects. But always the main focus for writing stuff like that is with the family and all.
Do you guys find that it's more difficult to get the whole band together because they're not all living in the same city, or are people pretty easy?
No, it's fine. I think, again, it's all basic communication, right? We have a good schedule, and we're spending a lot of time in the jam space right now, just as I said, writing and writing, because, our last album, which you would hear later in the show, we'll pass it, but it was almost a rush at times to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
So this time around, we said, after the theft of the truck and everything, we said, you know what, let's just write. Let's not make any plans, and that's why we're looking forward to Saturday in Toronto, because it's such a one-off show.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't have the show.
And then there's not as much pressure. It's not like, okay, we said we'd have an album out in 6 months, and oh my God.
There's no deadlines this time, which is just amazing.
Was there in the past?
Complete freedom.
Tentatives. Not so much deadlines, but we knew we had to go on tour those days, you know, because you book a tour 3-4 months in advance. You book.
Yeah.
So with all that, you know, in the back of your mind, it's like, okay, wait, if this isn't mastered and it's pressing a month before, we're not going to have it.
And then we can't sell it on the road, and yeah.
It's, then
why are we touring?
Keeps on getting clearer to me. Won't take it back.
Well, let's actually go back a little bit and, on a somber note, talk about the awful theft of the truck and your musical instruments. Oh. You guys then went on to do a great fundraiser for the band as well. What was it like to try and recoup from that?
With like the whole sort of clouds and lines, I thought, like it was insane for us because we had the gig coming up, like a fundraiser gig. We had tons of friends who were in the music scene over here, type thing. They were sharing, lending us gear, type thing, which was lovely. And then we had like the fundraiser show where we had like all our friends' bands and stuff jumping on. We had an amazing band, Repartee from Newfoundland, come out and play it as well too. And like literally, just it was packed. It was packed, and it was an amazing evening. And we raised a lot of money, and it was just like sort of so warming type thing. It uplifts you, and it kind of gives you goosebumps at times because it's like it's. Corny as that sounds, kind of like it just lifts you up, and you're like, wow, like people actually do dig it, people are enjoying it, like
care about what we're doing.
Yeah, we should keep going, you know what I mean? And like, because a lot of people would just kind of, there's a lot of pressure in this industry as there is.
Hmm.
To have something like that land on your lap, it's like, are they giving me a sign? I'd like, breaking up, but no, it made us kind of stronger, and then now that we kind of like. Passed over with that, and then had it to sort of like, let's take more time saving up for gear and writing some tunes and come back.
And here's the shameless plug. this Saturday's part two of the fundraising. We've got a silent auction talking about the whole music community. It's
very cool.
It's been incredible to see the support we've got, but some of the memorabilia that we have been running in the silent auction, Il Scarlet donated us a bass that they used in the music video signed by all of them.
Wow.
USS, a mixer. You know, it was actually Jay, Human Kebab's first ever mixer in USS. He's like, yeah, take this, we'll sign. We got signed vinyl from Sheepdogs, Tragically Hit, Matt Good,
that's pretty awesome.
Hell Colorado, like it's, Big Sugar,
I don't want to serious heavy hitters, like, right?
This silent auction is, it's just, you know, Amy Winehouse Foundation sent us a memorabilia plaque and CDs. And
I'd pay for some of those things, yeah.
Very cool.
It's crazy, man. Like, just the support, like you said, it was just overwhelming at times. And we got to sign Bippy Shirt. The Simon Neil.
Nice.
That was my little touch to it. Fanboy out the side. Yeah.
Well, that's really nice to know that, you know, usually you think of your band as a big pile of instruments, you know, but hey, it looks like you guys don't even need them.
I'm sure with the gear going missing and even getting and using replacements, I mean, even as an amateur musician, I know that every guitar has a different character, every keyboard. Like, what was it like adjusting to using replacements?
See, that was one of the most uplifting things as well, too. So when we went to Kingston, and basically it was the first gig we had after it, we were using borrowed Vona guitars from Gibson and basically like rentals and different friends lending us stuff, and we were kind of just dug in and had it type thing, and it was one of the best performances we've kind of.
It's I think the toughest part, and you know the relationship you build, like especially for Tal, our guitarist, and Scott, our bass player, you know.
Mm.
Tal's Ron Gibson, he's had since I think 91.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a big hit.
You can kind of price on it, right? That's you know, that's part of his body. It was tough as I play a keyboard that's digital. At the end of the day, I can reset my settings. I can go spend the money and get the same thing. You know? The
keys are generally the same size.
You know,
look for the same action or weighted keys or whatever. But
those two reasons, you know, their guitars and basses. That was
sounds great.
But Gibson come through.
Excellent.
Lends us. Hey, you guys need stuff there?
Yeah.
Just drop our name here and there.
We were thinking about sponsoring you guys. We didn't steal your stuff or anything, but you know.
Playing the long game.
Yeah.
Let's go back to touring, because I imagine as well that being in a smaller town band that you're more accustomed to life on the road. Does that hold true?
I think so. You definitely. It's we were weird because we got into touring really early as a band. I think most bands, you know, write their first EP, kind of do Ontario, boom, whereas we're like, straight away, it's like, let's go out east. We just want us to go east, let's go, you know. And I think our first tour was like 5 weeks with 20 shows. It was terrible. You know, we had more days off than we had on.
Actually, Shane's plug is one of three secret broadcasts who were playing with on the weekend. Break up Pop Tart Cherries.
Oh, yeah.
Cherries. Yeah. They're our best touring buddies.
Fantastic.
The ship was sinking, but the band kept playing on. You know, it felt alright when everything was going wrong. Whoa. When the nights push up, but the days keep growing long. You gotta shake it out, get up and get along. And I said, don't know, crazy, but I bet my days, and I don't feel the same anymore. And I said, don't know, crazy, but I bet my days, and I don't feel the same anymore. And we'll sing. And you think we're going under, we'll keep on treading water. So love will come and rise our roads and puts us on our feet. And you think we're going under, we'll keep on treading water and change the track and answer back.
Time we've gone without touring, and it's weird. You go, you know, it's kind of like a relationship, wrestling. Mm-hmm. Well, it's cool yet, but at the same time, it's like, we're still writing.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it's yeah, it's nice.
We're still developing. Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think that in a bigger city, there's less pressure to do it because it's harder to saturate your audience. Mm-hmm. You can go, you know, in Toronto. Let's go play in Greektown. Let's go play in Roncesvalles. Yeah, let's go wherever, you know. And you know, no one's really going to notice.
Yeah, it's like a tour in the city.
Yeah. Too many bands I find in Toronto do that and they exhaust their fan base.
That's exactly.
One nice thing, you know, we're an hour outside. But hey, we're just patronizing more than once every 4 to 6 weeks anyway.
And you're an hour away from like a bunch of cities. Yes. So like this time we'll go to Kitchener and this time we'll go to Hamilton. Right, it's like,
And a lot of people these days, if they know that you play every 2 weeks,
they don't need to come see you.
Exactly. They say, we'll catch them next time.
You mentioned that the writing and touring were sort of separate processes. And I've heard that from other bands, too, that like you can't be in a creative place when you're on the road sharing stuff that you've already done.
See, it's weird, though, because with us, we've had a lot of sound checks where
I wouldn't say that.
But it's not like a fully creative process. It's almost like teasing the fact.
Yeah.
And then we bring it back into the jam spot, and then it's like, let's see where this goes, and then we can really kind of let loose with it.
Sure. Let's work on that thing you did by accident.
Yeah, that thing you stumbled into. The
jam. For sure. And I mean, I've found before as well that it's just important to be recording at all times for that reason. Because you never know.
That's what makes these things so good.
I'm holding up my phone.
You think of a riff, instantly record it. Better than any memory.
Absolutely. You want to do a cover?
Unfortunately,
look up the chords, it's right there.
It's nuts. It's crazy. The bar worker, there's a guy who came and played the other night, he's got everything on his iPad. He's got a stamp on his iPad.
For
sure.
It's like, he doesn't need to learn anything anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, it used to be this sort of judgmental thing where, you know, if you'd see an electronic artist or a rapper or something, and they'd come in and they just plug in their iPhone or something, but now, you know, they could have, you know, downloaded their art, their stuff that they'd worked really hard on and just figured, screw it, you know, I got this in my hand.
Yeah. Why not?
Put some beats on. It's amazing.
It's crazy.
And it gives people the illusion of like that separation from creativity, but obviously like you're also like you're creating it behind the scenes. You're not just like make a song.
I remember when I was young, I thought I could be a DJ, and then I looked into the Logics and the programs, and it's like, okay, these guys actually do work.
Yeah, they're just making it look easy.
I know how to download a Jay-Z song and play it.
You don't realize the layers and the hours, and it's crazy.
Oh, for sure, it's amazing. I mean, when it comes down to it, being people that, you know, play instruments physically on stage, live, this sort of thing, do you guys ever think of, you know, adding an electronic element to the band?
No, I don't think we need to. We have little things that we're adding in, actually, that help. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of drummers now have these drum pads next to them.
Sure.
Yeah, like a kit and a pad.
Yeah. Sam, our drummer, started using it, and he's always run a metronome live, so he's always had something up there, but now he can run it through his pad, and we've got a few samples that we use that just add layers.
So useful also, having the drummer able to have the click.
Yeah,
you know he's on.
we kind of didn't have a choice because, again, we use arpeggiators in certain songs.
Sure.
And, like, you know, we found the easiest, we were really worried about the first few times, you know, because if I'm off.
Sure.
Yeah. You know,
tempo's got to match.
So, I'm not off.
It's everyone else.
That wasn't me, was it, guys? You're the only one with the arpeggiator.
No, I was screwing with your equipment before. It's probably
it. No, your metronome, drum.
Sure. Yeah.
No arguing out of that one.
Yeah. Don't deny it. Yeah.
From the ground, the walls came falling down all the same. Tried to hold it back, couldn't help but answer back. And hand over your mouth, suppressed your fill with doubt. Can you find a way out? Hey, away, you can't keep those wolves at bay. Hey, away, they won't let you get away. You can come around. all the signs as you will, keeping up the front, even in the wrong. We'll make it out of here, and then we'll disappear. Can you find the way out? Thinking that we'll be on our way, thinking that we'll chase them all away. Hey, away. You can't keep those walls at bay. I say, hey, away. They won't let you get away. Far too close for comfort, far too deep to see. Left the troll upon the sand, love between you and me. Say, hey, away.
And speaking of creativity and instrumentation, let's talk a little bit about the writing process. I love asking bands about this. Yeah. Do you find that you're more creative individually or as a group?
Every way. I honestly don't think there's no formula. I think the last album, there was a formula where Tao, our guitarist, was heavily influential in a lot of the parts, you know. Mm-hmm. The same way Jimmy, you know, with a lot of the vocals. Now it's kind of like, whatever works.
Mm.
We know we've got to be productive wherever it happens. As we said earlier, Jim being at home with a guitar on his own, or if it happens this way or that way, we're just
sure.
Yeah.
Is that a result of you guys becoming more comfortable with the process and having it just a little more organic and just happening? Or?
And also just learning each other more.
Yeah.
If you know how each other play, then you can sort of anticipate, oh yeah, you'll like this riff because you can do this or whatever, right?
Yeah, find out what the other person is going to do before he actually does it.
That's great. Yeah, exactly.
We already have so many songs on the back burner, too, that just don't quite work. And being comfortable enough with each other that, okay, spend a lot of time on this idea, but to be able to say, look, just listen to this one, then listen to these ones, it doesn't help clicking.
Sure, and that can be a really hard thing to do with someone that you don't know very well. I'm sorry, but this part is not working. You know, and being able to just say, you know what, let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, I still love you, buddy, but...
again, these things, right? And now being a producer, we can record demos of these songs still, and hey, we might come back to it in a few weeks ago. Sure. Hey, actually, that's really cool. We should try doing that part here.
And that's,
exactly.
That's a funny thing with music, too, right? It's like so often, I remember, especially like back in the day when I was buying CDs, and you put it on, and you love that one song, and you're like kind of mad about the rest of the album, and then it collects dust for a year, and you come back, and you're like, wait, holy shit, I love that song.
Yes. It's funny how that happens, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Do you ever find that with your own writing? Like, you'll come up with something, and be like, meh, and then come back, and like, wait, actually...
Yeah. The last album, like, we must have wrote that kind of 2.5 years ago. We started writing it like 2.5 years ago, and, you know, it's been a long... But even now, you listen back to songs that I was always kind of, meh. Now we're like, hey.
You know what? I really like Disco Joe.
Where'd you come from?
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you find that it ever happens the other way when you... you know, you're totally in love with an idea or something, then you come back and you're, what was I thinking?
Is the repetition of listening to it or playing it and singing it out over and over, right? You kind of get, not feeling it as much as I did the first day.
It's not have staying power, especially for you guys, right? Because you're playing it over and over again.
Yeah. Tom Wilson once told us a great line. We used to work with his daughter, Madeline.
Mm.
But anyway, Tom once turned to us after a meeting and said, never write a song that you don't want to play for the rest of your life. Because you never know which one it might be, but if it becomes a hit, no matter, you could have written 10 more albums, but everyone wants to hear that one song.
Yeah, and like you hear about it in with like really big bands, like Billy Corgan hates playing 1979 or whatever it is.
For sure, They might be giants hate playing the Istanbul is Constantinople song. I remember I saw them, and everyone just was like cheering that. They're like, we're just going to play our newest album.
Yeah.
Fuck you, we don't care about that.
Yeah, you might not even be here, dude.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing too, and it's something we actually haven't talked about with a lot of bands, but like when you structure a set, are you planning like a very specific flow, or is it just like, we know we've got to include some of the singles, and like how does that come together?
See, now actually with the album having to like write the previous album we just did, having to like write the set now with trying to put in the new tunes, because obviously as soon as you write a new song, it's so hyped and pumped and attention that you want to push that out there and be fine, but then you're going through the list and you're like, okay, we've got to play this, we still got to play this one. That's, you know, yeah, what I mean?
People will like, flip if we don't do Zap Zap.
Yeah, it's like the structured of everything type thing, and we kind of need to, we always look at like the way it's going, mm-hmm. and like build it up here or bring it down. It's like,
well, and you kind of want to sandwich the new material in.
Yeah, you don't want to lose
it. Kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want people to be, oh yeah, I know this song. Oh, I don't know this song.
Yeah. Now let's get a little more in depth with the new material, because we've sort of touched on that you're doing some different stuff, but what do you think the band is doing differently in this album versus things that you've done before?
I feel like we're taking a more darker sort of thing. No, I wouldn't say dark tones at least.
Like gothy?
No, yeah. No, I don't think we're doing anything much differently. We're more experienced, like anyone, you know.
Mm.
The best teachers are the best teachers because of experience, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. You just grow. I mean, I find a huge part of writing music is simply learning how to get the idea out of you.
Yeah, absolutely. That is very interesting. I'm sure any musician's written hundreds of songs, but people only know a few, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't say there's much different. I think I would like to think we're just writing better songs, but again, how do you judge? It's
yeah, and there's always that toss-up between, like, hone what you've done and perfect it, or break new ground and experiment with something. But it's a gamble too, right? Because you hear about like big bands trying something new and then they lose their whole old fan base.
Yeah,
and
yeah, sure.
A balance of old and new fans.
So we still have a fan base. It doesn't really
matter. It's whatever we want.
When it's your aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
You guys are great.
They love it. Yeah. I think we're right. They seem to love it.
They're going to clap no matter what.
They love it.
You guys recently, you're so special.
Yeah. Thanks, Ma.
Yeah.
Bob Lauder. No, for sure.
Yeah.
It's weird. I always love keeping it familiar, but changing it. Like, there's always got to be that sort of reinvention, or else you just get bored, right? Like,
yeah.
You write four chord songs for the rest of your life with the same thing, just different place.
Well, and I think that the serious music fans are always going to give you a measure of respect for. Yeah. Not, you know, completely saying, you know, you don't go from a death metal band to a folk band or whatever it is, but, you know, saying that, you know, this is our second album, it's not our first album, so we're not going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to still be us, but, you know, we're going to have developed, of course, you know, because otherwise you just see a band and you feel like they're stagnant, and then, you know, if the band's bored on stage, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
I think that's key to everything, is always challenging yourself, and that's what keeps any interest and any fascination and any passion is.
Mm-hmm.
Is having that challenge. So,
and that's just it too, as well. With like with your instrument, you're always finding new tricks and different things. Where like, Christ, even with your voice, it's like you hit that note and you go, something like that. And you know what I mean? It's just like you mess with it, and it's always that sort of. It's a fun sort of playground to work with. It's just like you're always shocking yourself and going, that sounds different. And sometimes they bring it to the table, people be like, you sound terrible, but sometimes it works.
Yeah,
it's that, just all about that experimentation.
Yeah.
Maybe this song I'm going to go, make up weird noises.
Yeah.
And do you ever find yourself reinventing existing songs, like, I don't know, like moving it an octave or changing the tempo, or do you find...
I think that comes more with our live set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like being trying different things and changing little things around, extending an intro. Yeah,
keeping it fresh. What is the live experience like for you guys when you're up on stage?
There's nowhere else I want to be. Like, it, literally, when we talk about touring and stuff like that, it's like I long for the road type thing, so to speak, because it's just like. That's your only focus. Is that
that's the intro to a new song, by the way.
Love for the world. We're going country.
So this new material that's on the way, you've talked about how you're writing. Where are we at in terms of recording, and when are we going to hear the new stuff?
Give me.
You know what? Is it bad if we don't want to put a deadline on it right now?
Okay, no that's
totally.
Fair.
We demand numbers.
No, like I say.
No, of course.
I say we're halfway there.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Halfway through the process of thinking up the songs, and then playing the songs, and recording the songs.
No, I'll tell you one thing. If you come out on Saturday night at 11 p.m.
To the Rivoli in Toronto.
To the Rivoli in Toronto. By 11:01, you'll be a minute into a brand new song. I think we're playing four. on the side of it.
So screw the album. Yeah, come see it live.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to take tell us what you think. It's going to be exciting.
So, guys, you have a show coming up at the Rivoli. That's next Saturday.
Absolutely.
Right on, at 9 p.m.
Doors are at 8, or first band's on 9.
Excellent.
Right. Fantastic. And you guys also have a silent auction that's going to be going on at the show. Tell us a little bit about that.
We're excited. They'll run basically all the memorabilia and all the prizes are listed on our Facebook page on the event.
Great.
Which people can find by searching the Ascot Royals.
Yeah, facebook.com/theascotroyals.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. And as a special giveaway for this episode, we have an app that we've told you about before. It's available for free in the Apple Store and for your Android device. One of the functions of it is to leave us a voice memo. And if you send us a voice memo singing a couple of lines, that's all we need, of any Ascot Royals song.
Which you've already heard in this podcast. If you sing us a couple of lines from any Ascot Royals song, you will be immediately guest listed whenever we notice that you've done that. So
fantastic.
Just tell us about it. We'll put your name on the guest list for the Rivoli next Saturday. You're going to see three amazing bands. Four amazing bands.
Well, one of them sucks.
Yeah, sorry, whatever band I was talking about. You're going to see four fantastic groups, and you're going to see them for free, and all you have to do is make an ass out of yourself. So, unless you can sing.
Which we're not going to play on the air. It's actually a pretty safe way to make an ass of yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But if it sounds really good, we might have to give, you know, the vocal copy to the Ascots here and you know, do a wonderful job. Thank you so much for joining us on this fine Monday evening, and we will see you all next week with another fantastic Canadian artist on the Roundtable Podcast.
Oh, yeah. If you'd like to submit a song, book an interview, or just tell us what we're doing right, you can contact us at indieroundtable@gmail.com. That's indieroundtable@gmail.com.